Doing this series on Old Testament heroes. We're calling the series Diamonds in the Rough. And today we're going to look at this man, David. It's really obvious, isn't it, from the picture. If you grew up in Israel 3,000 years ago, you would have had a David poster on your bedroom wall. That's just a fact. That's what you would have done. Culturally, David was like a mix between Robin Hood, the Queen, and Elvis. That's who David is. He's the king, he's this amazing warrior that everybody loves, and he's a renowned singer-songwriter who's popular with the ladies. We're very similar people, David and I. Very, very similar. And the most famous thing about David, of course, has to be his fight with Goliath. Everyone knows a bit of that story, don't they? Everyone knows a bit about David and Goliath. David has a one-on-one fight with a man about 350 times his size, and somehow he wins, and it's a brilliant underdog story about overcoming the odds and beating your fear, right? Well, maybe. Let's have a look at the story. It's definitely about overcoming fear, I think, but maybe not quite in the obvious way. And this is in a book of the Old Testament, there we go, called 1 Samuel. We've got 1 and 2 Samuel. Originally, it was all one book, but it was too long for English people, so we split it into two. And this is in 1 Samuel chapter 17. And all throughout the Old Testament, we're following the story of the people of Israel. And at this point in time, they've got their first king. They have a king, a man called Saul. But they keep getting attacked by their neighbors, and particularly a group called the Philistines. And when this story begins, the two armies are facing off. Okay, they kind of study the side of a valley, eyeballing each other. It's all a bit aggressive. And then we start this story, okay? So we're going to go through the story. It's a reasonably long story, but it's a good story. And we're just going to go through it, and I'll say a bit after each bit, okay? So here we go. The Philistines now mustered their army for battle and camped between Socho in Judah and Azekah at Ephes-Damim. Saul countered by gathering his Israelite troops near the valley of Elah. So the Philistines and Israelites faced each other on opposite hills with the valley between them. Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. He also wore bronze leg armor, and he carried a bronze javelin on his shoulder. The shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam, tipped with an iron spearhead that weighed 15 pounds. His armor bearer walked ahead of him carrying a shield. Goliath stood and shouted a taunt across to the Israelites. "Why are you all coming out to fight?" he called. "I am the Philistine champion. But kill me, then we will be your slaves." I've got a line ahead there, haven't I? "I'm the Philistine champion, but you are only the servants of Saul. Choose one to come down here and fight me. If he kills me, then we will be your slaves. But if I kill him, you will be our slaves. I defy the armies of Israel today. Send me a man who will fight me." When Saul and the Israelites heard this, they were terrified and deeply shaken. Now, it might be helpful to know, the king of Israel at this time, Saul, is in part the king because of his height. They partly wanted him to be the leader because he was tall. They thought, well, you know, that'll make him a good leader, he's tall. Well, that's never a good reason to pick a leader. But that's what they did. But the Philistines show up for this fight, and Goliath is a lot bigger than Saul. He's significantly bigger than Saul. And it says Goliath was the Philistine champion. Literally, that word champion means a man in between. So he's the man in between his own army and the enemy, the threat. He's the man in between. And he's huge. The text we just read says he's over 9 feet, which doesn't sound believable, does it? That sounds a bit too big for him to be a human. What's happening is that's based on a certain understanding of how Hebrew cubits and lengths work. Some of the books I've read suggest that most likely he was probably well over 7 feet. So he's still freakishly tall, but you can kind of see that that is plausible. There are basketball players who are over 7 feet tall. Probably not as wide as Goliath, but they are there. So he's absolutely huge. And also, this was at a time when the average person was about 9 inches shorter than the average person now. So by the standards of any time, Goliath is huge. He is not the kid that was picked on in the playground. He's massive. He's freakishly massive. But the story also says a lot about his armor. It's got this kind of unusually long explanation of Goliath's armor. And what's happening here is Goliath is being portrayed as some sort of grotesque exaggeration of a hero. He's an over-the-top embodiment of a hero. He's huge and strong, but he's also got all of the best military equipment of the time. He's got all the best stuff. He's massive, but he's also covered in bronze. He's huge, but he's basically dressed like Iron Man. Like, he's a terrifying sight. And Goliath's approach to this fight and to life is this: I'm stronger than you, and I've got better equipment than you, and I will destroy you. That's what Goliath is saying. And the Goliath approach that we kind of see embodied in him is kind of build up your own self-esteem, your own confidence, and take on the world. And it's generally what the world says about overcoming fear, isn't it? This is what you do. You give yourself a pep talk. You make yourself as big and as great as you possibly can. You protect yourself. You gather your resources. You assert yourself. That's how you overcome fear. That's how you make your way in the world. So in this context, Goliath is hugely confident, and probably with good reason. He looks at the Israeli army and goes, yeah, you're all about half my size. Who's going to take me on? And his ultimatum actually seems fair enough. He basically says, look, one of you fight me, and the nation of the loser will be the slaves of the nation of the winner. And then only one person has to die. No great bloodshed. We don't have to have this big war. Come on, just one of you fight me, and then that'll deal with it. But the thing is, nobody volunteers to fight Goliath because they know that they will lose. And not only will they lose, but they'll be the person responsible for committing the whole nation to slavery. You don't want that on your gravestone. So nobody volunteers. Note one little detail, though, because we'll come back to why this is significant. Goliath has an armor, an armor bearer, a guy that carries his shield kind of next to him, stroke in front of him. And Goliath isn't carrying it. That's how confident he is. He isn't even, he's there for battle, but some other guy is just holding his shield on one side because it's a bit of an inconvenience. That's how confident he is, not even holding his own shield. Let's carry on. Oh, there's a picture of him, by the way. You probably already saw that. Now, David was the son of a man named Jesse, an Ephrathite from Bethlehem in the land of Judah. Jesse was an old man at the time, and he had 8 sons. Jesse's 3 oldest sons, Eliab, Abinadab, and Shimea, had already joined Saul's army to fight the Philistines. David was the youngest son. David's 3 oldest brothers stayed with Saul's army, but David went back and forth so he could help his father with the sheep in Bethlehem. For 40 days, every morning and evening, the Philistine champion strutted in front of the Israelite army. One day, Jesse said to David, "Take this basket of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread and carry them quickly to your brothers, and give these 10 cuts of cheese to their captain. See how your brothers are getting along and bring back a report on how they're doing." So this is great storytelling because you've got the contrast. You've got massive, scary Goliath and then little David. And he's really young. He's probably like mid-teens at this point. And he's the youngest of a load of brothers in a family that's not an important family. So he's a runt. He's a nobody. In a culture where the oldest son was really prestigious and the younger son really wasn't, he's nobody. He's nothing. And then we go back to Goliath briefly, and I love this, that it says he strutted. I just imagine in this valley between the armies, Goliath is just wandering along. Maybe he's doing some bicep curls and some flexes and just showing everybody how powerful he is. That's what he's doing. Just kind of smugly taunting Israel with how scary he is. And David, in contrast, is basically an errand boy at this point in the story. He's taking food to his big brothers who are on the front line. So they're on the front line, scared, and he's not even at their level, so to speak. He's just bringing the food. Let's continue. David's brothers were with Saul and the Israelite army at the Valley of Elah, fighting against the Philistines. So David left the sheep with another shepherd and set out early the next morning with the gifts, as Jesse had directed him. He arrived at the camp just as the Israelite army was leaving for the battlefield with shouts and battle cries. Soon, the Israelite and Philistine forces stood facing each other, army against army. David left his things with the keeper of supplies and hurried out to the ranks to greet his brothers. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, came out from the Philistine ranks. Then David heard him shout his unusual taunt to the army of Israel. As soon as the Israelite army saw him, they began to run away in fright. "Have you seen the giant?" the men asked. "He comes out each day to defy Israel. The king has offered a huge reward to anyone who kills him. He will give that man one of his daughters for a wife, and the man's entire family will be exempted from paying taxes." So this is quite interesting. David leaves the sheep, goes off to where the battle is, and then he leaves the supplies. And again, this is good storytelling. It's symbolic. David is leaving behind the things that he's been associated with before. He's practically detaching himself from those roles that he's been in. He leaves them behind. And then he learns the situation. Goliath is shouting his stuff. And then he hears, there's a wonderful reward, actually. It's a really good incentive. You get to marry a princess and you never have to pay tax ever again. That's quite a good reward. But still nobody volunteers. Again, it's telling. They've seen Goliath and they think, well, I'm not going to win. So it doesn't matter what the reward is. I'm not fighting him. David asked the soldier standing nearby, "What will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending his defiance of Israel? Who is this pagan Philistine anyway that he's allowed to defy the armies of the living God?" And these men gave David the same reply. They said, "Yes, this is the reward for killing him." But when David's oldest brother Eliab heard David talking to the men, he was angry. "What are you doing around here anyway?" he demanded. "What about those few sheep you're supposed to be taking care of? I know about your pride and deceit. You just want to see the battle." "What have I done now?" David replied. "I was only asking a question." He walked over to some others and asked them the same thing and received the same answer. Then David's question was reported to King Saul, and the king sent for him. "Don't worry about this Philistine," David told Saul. "I'll go and fight him." "Don't be ridiculous," Saul replied. "There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy, and he's been a man of war since his youth." But David persisted. "I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats," he said. "When a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. I've done this to lions and bears, and I'll do it to this pagan Philistine too, for he's defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine." Saul finally consented. "All right, go ahead," he said, "and may the Lord be with you." So you've got at the beginning of this section this typical older brother banter. "What are you doing here, David? You should be at home with the sheep. You're just a little runt. Go away. We're the big boys. We're the ones who should be dealing with this. Stay out of it." And then the king, Saul, hears. Why does he send for David at this point? Nobody wants to go and fight Goliath. He hears rumors that there's this teenage boy who's up for doing it. Why does he send for him? He's probably shocked that anybody, even a teenage boy, is willing to volunteer to fight Goliath. He just wants to see, well, who is this guy? Is he crazy? And what happens next is remarkable. I would argue the biggest miracle in this story is not how the fight goes. It's the fact that Saul entrusts the fate of a nation to this teenage boy. That's the biggest miracle. What is he thinking? That he entrusts the whole fate of the country to David. And amazingly, David is just as confident as Goliath. He has some experiences with fighting big wild animals, which are not too different to Goliath. And he seems to have a particular trust that God will take care of him. Read on. Then Saul gave David his own armor, a bronze helmet and a coat of mail. David put it on, strapped the sword over it, and took a step or two to see what it was like, for he had never worn such things before. "I can't go in these," he protested to Saul. "I'm not used to them." So David took them off again. He picked up 5 smooth stones from a stream and put them in his shepherd's bag. And then, armed only with his shepherd's staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. Goliath walked out toward David with his shield bearer ahead of him, sneering in contempt at this ruddy-faced boy. "Am I a dog," he roared at David, "that you come at me with a stick?" And he cursed David by the names of his gods. "Come over here and I'll give your flesh to the birds and wild animals," Goliath yelled. It's a ridiculous scene. Israel's champion can't even put on the armor. It's too big for him, it's too much. Goliath is still smug, he's still preening. I imagine he's oiling himself or something in no man's land between the armies, still doing his bicep curls, 1001, 1002. Could do this all day. He's just carrying on. But David's presence makes him really angry. It's insulting to him that Israel sends David. It's like, this is not even worth my time. Come on, Israel. This is ridiculous. It's pathetic. Why are you sending him to face me? David replied to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Today the Lord will conquer you, and I'll kill you and cut off your head, and then I'll give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and wild animals, and the whole world will know there's a God in Israel." And everyone assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people, but not with sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he'll give you to us. And again, David just seems really confident. And he attributes the victory to God before it even happens. He knows he's going to win. He knows he's going to win because he trusts God. But he also knows he's going to win because he's not actually going to fight Goliath. To be honest, he's not actually going to fight him. Let's see. As Goliath moved closer to attack, David quickly ran out to meet him. Reaching into his shepherd's bag and taking out a stone, he hurled it with his sling and hit the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank in, and Goliath stumbled and fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with only a sling and a stone, for he had no sword. Then David ran over and pulled Goliath's sword from its sheath. David used it to kill him and cut off his head. End of story. Now remember, Goliath probably wasn't very quick, like physically. He's enormous. Enormous people tend not to move so quickly. He's covered in just a ridiculous amount of metal. So he's not moving quickly. David is small. He's not wearing any armor. He probably is quite nimble, quite speedy. And he runs to just the right position. He gets out his sling, which would look something a bit like this. And it's thought that somebody who used this skillfully could fire a stone at least 60 miles an hour. So effectively, you know, David is used to using a sling. He's done it lots of times. And Goliath is a very slow-moving target, and he's very overconfident. So effectively what happens is David shoots him, sort of. The equivalent of shooting for the time, fires this stone right into the middle of his forehead. Effectively, he doesn't fight him, actually. He doesn't need to. It's not a fair fight. Remember, as I said, Goliath is not carrying his shield. If he was carrying his shield, maybe he'd be better off. If Star Trek has taught us anything, it's this. Never go into a battle without your shields. That was a very nerdy joke, I'm sorry. Anyway, the result of all this is Israel doesn't have to be the slaves to the Philistines. Everybody's happy. David is revered by the people of Israel. He saved them from slavery. They write songs about him. They love him. Eventually, many years after that, he becomes the king, and it's all wonderful. So it is a nice underdog story, isn't it? The underdog wins. But what's the point of it? What's the point of this story? How does it speak into how we might deal with fear today? How are we supposed to do something with this story? Well, I think it depends on who you identify with, who you think in the story is you, or who you're supposed to be like. And the obvious person to identify with is David, isn't it? He's the hero. And a Sunday school approach is like this. Be more like David. Be humble and do the right thing and be courageous and trust in God and do what David did, and then miracles will happen and you'll be able to beat the giants in your life. That's kind of the Sunday school approach. And there's two problems with that I think are quite significant. Firstly, that makes it about you. The pressure's on you to deliver, even when the going gets tough. And that's kind of what I call the religious approach. You try hard, you do it right, you'll be rewarded. But the wider message of the Bible is that it's not about you and that you can't be your own hero. So I really don't think that's the point of the story. Secondly, at no point in the story does it say that the nature of David's victory was miraculous. You ever thought that? It never says that it's miraculous. It was a bit unlikely, and it would make a great film, but it doesn't seem to me to be directly miraculous. There's no connection here between doing all the right things and then God miraculously defeating all your giants for you, whatever they may be. There's no connection there. It could be that you think, well, maybe we're supposed to identify with Goliath. Maybe we're supposed to be like him. Which might seem silly, but aside from the fact that Goliath loses in this story, he represents the world's approach to dealing with fear. This is what the world tells you to do. As I said, he's kind of a grotesque parody of being a hero. Be as powerful as you can. The more power you have, the better position you'll be in. Get as much armor as you can, look as big as you can, give yourself a pep talk, go out there and dominate your fear. Now, that works to a point in some situations in life. That's the adrenaline solution in certain situations. If you need to save a baby from a burning building, tell yourself whatever you need to tell yourself to get that done, okay? Just go and do that. Whatever you need to say to yourself, fine. But the Goliath approach doesn't work in situations where you definitely can't win, and it doesn't work in the long term. If you have a long-term sickness or a difficult relationship or financial worries, all sorts of things, the Goliath approach only gets you so far. The Goliath approach is no answer, really, to life's biggest issues. It doesn't work. Third option, guess what? I think this is the right option. Third option, you could identify with the army of Israel. I think that's who we're supposed to be like in the story. The normal people. Think about this. What's the story of the army across this passage? They face a giant and they're afraid. There's an insurmountable enemy and they have to face reality. No one of them wants to fight and face certain death. Someone comes along who says that he can beat Goliath and they make fun of him. But then a miracle happens and this man who looks small and weak and incapable is entrusted with their fate. Amazingly, he defeats the giant that they fear. All they have to do is let him fight for them. That's all they need to do. And then they cheer and they sing songs and they benefit from the results of his victory. That's what the army do. See, here's the thing. David is not an example for the Israelite army. He's not an example. He fights Goliath and they watch. That's not being an example. That's just winning on somebody's behalf. He's a weak savior. He doesn't win despite his weakness. He wins because of it. Because he's so weak, because he's so laughable to everybody that's there, he comes without armor. Goliath doesn't even raise his shield. David wins because he's not perceived as a threat, because he's seen as weak. He trains as a shepherd because he's a runt. And through what he learns in that, he saves his people. He substitutes in for them, even though they think that he's weak. In the New Testament, it says something very similar about Jesus. It says, our insurmountable enemy is our own sin, our selfishness, our inadequacy, our fear, and ultimately our death. We can't beat those things through any amount of gathering resources or positive thinking or trying to be dominant. It just doesn't work. But Jesus steps in and says that he can be our champion, our man in between, our substitute. And our initial reaction is often to mock him. How could an obscure Jewish teacher from 2,000 years ago be a champion over anything? He's weak. What's he going to do? I've got my own armor. I'm wealthy. I'm well-connected. I'm capable. I can make life work myself. And then a miracle happens in some of us, millions of people actually, and we do this crazy thing and we say, actually, yeah, Jesus, I'm going to let you be my champion and fight on my behalf, my biggest giants. That's the miracle. Jesus, my fate is in your hands. And then on the cross and in his resurrection, he defeats the real giants of selfishness, inadequacy, fear, and death. He's the one that beats them. And what do? Same as the Israeli army. We cheer. We sing songs. We're pleased about it. That's why we do those things at church every week. Elsewhere in the New Testament, there's a book called Hebrews. And in that book, it kind of shows you how Jesus fulfills various things that happen in the Old Testament. And there's a line where it says, remember David, amongst others, remember David, but fix your eyes on Jesus. And it uses this word for Jesus, archegos, it's a Greek word, and it means, well, one of the things that it means is champion. The man in between who fights for us. It's saying, David, yeah, great, remember him, but he points us to the real champion. That's the whole point of the David story. So I have no big application for you in this message this morning, except let's be like the Israeli army. What do? They let him fight for them, and then they sing songs and cheer at the end. So I'm going to pray, and then we're going to continue singing songs. Jesus, thank you that you are our champion, that you're not like Goliath. You're like David, but better. And that because of that, we don't need to fight all these big insurmountable battles for ourselves. You've already overcome. You're the one who beats the giants. We just let you do it and watch. And as we come to continue singing to you, just impress that on our hearts in a new way. Any of us here this morning that are trying to fight the giants ourselves, help us to just step back, be humble, and let you do it for us. You're the one who has conquered our inadequacy, our fear, our death, our sin. Thank you, Lord. Amen.